This podcast is sponsored by the Greater Ontario Convention and Visitors Bureau. At Greater Ontario, people make the space and we bring the rest. Only here can you take care of business first, and in less than 1 hour in any direction, you can enjoy the views of scenic mountains, deserts, vineyards, the great outdoors, and metropolitan areas, both historic and cosmopolitan. Greater Ontario has become the ultimate destination for meeting planners who prioritize an incredible value. Due to the multitude of amenities, lodging, dining, and exploration options, capped with enviable sunshine 300 days out of the year. Visit gocvb.org to plan your next meeting or event.
Hello, and welcome to CMCA's Community Podcast. I'm Jane Kerlock, the Director of CMCA. The purpose of our podcast is to encourage believers in our Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm really excited to introduce to you Scott Hamilton. We all know him as the world-famous ice skater. He spoke at CMCA this year. And we have found him to be a devoted Christian, a model of integrity, and such a fun guy to be around. His his facial expressions just keep you entertained. So welcome, Scott.
Oh, Jane, thank you. This is fun. I had a blast in Colorado Springs, and it's great to reconnect on this podcast. So
it is.
Good times. Let's have some fun.
Yes. Scott, you've got a couple events coming up. Would you like to tell us about them?
Big events. November 21st in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. We're doing our fifth annual, we missed last year because of COVID, but fifth annual, an evening with Scott Hamilton and friends. And it's an amazing event where we take professional, Olympic figure skaters and put them in front of live music. And the marriage of the live music with, incredible Lady A's doing it this year for King and Country, CeCe Winans, Grace Potter, and several more amazing artists that we will surprise our guests with. They're all performing in honor of their producer, songwriter friend Busby, who was tragically taken by glioblastoma multiforme, from diagnosis to succumbing 9 weeks in one day, left behind a beautiful wife and three young daughters. And so we're going to honor him and raise a lot of money for the right kind of research for glioblastoma, a very deadly form of brain cancer. That's November 21st. And then in January, we're hosting the U.S. Figure Skating Championships at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And there, we will announce the U.S. Olympic team for figure skating. So it's going to be a great, great time of the highest level skating you can imagine. And a couple Olympic favorites will be on the ice there, like Nathan Chen. Will be competing for like his fifth or sixth U.S. title. I've lost count. He's that great. And, all the other champion figure skaters that will be competing for berths on the Olympic team. We'll be here in Nashville in January. So we're really excited about that as well.
They sound really fun.
They are. If you've never seen skating live, like if you've never been like right next to the ice or even in the same, the speed, athleticism, the emotion, the artistry, just the explosive nature of skating, to see it three-dimensionally instead of two-dimensionally on a TV screen. It's so fantastic. It's one of the most exciting sports you can witness because of, again, you're on 185 by 85 sheet of ice by yourself, and you've got to command it. You just gotta, go with it. It's really amazing to see it live.
Well, thank you, Scott. I also want to introduce John Ramstad. John is my co-host today. John is from Beyond Influence. John, you want to tell us a minute about your company?
Yeah, just real quick. We do leadership training and coaching and work with leaders all over the world and across Africa and the military. And Scott, hearing your testimony and everything that you went through, man, so resonated. 9 years ago, I had an accident that put me in the hospital for over 2 years, and the recovery and what happened coming out of that was one of the most difficult things. And, everybody, something, Scott, what you said was, I know we're going to talk about it, is that you heard somebody say that, you know, having cancer was one of the worst things that ever happened, but also one of the best things.
Yeah. Right? And, it's hard to even imagine that if you've never been through it, but I'm so sorry you had to go through your 2 years of recovery. That is amazing. But, you know, our bodies, you know, our bodies are incredibly fragile, very vulnerable to so many things. At the same time, they're equally resilient. But what I like to remind people is ultimately we're temporary, you know, and that's why it's so important to stay as close to the Lord as we possibly can. You know, it's like, this is sort of an e-ticket ride, you know, the old Disneyland kind of reference, and, you know, the highs and the lows and the experiences that we get to have on earth in this body is just a fraction, not even a fraction of what we're going to experience in eternity. So, you know, it's really enduring, and it's allowing, I think it's Romans 5, that talks about suffering produces endurance. What is it? Endurance. Sorry, I've got this. It's on the tip of my tongue. Character and character hope, you know, and the hope that only comes through Christ. So, you know, it is that, you know, we've got to get through and we have to endure, and there's going to be periods of incredible suffering. And it's the one thing I think we all have in common. It's how you allow that suffering to do its work, and how you allow it to reveal just how incredibly resilient you can be. And here you are, right? You have a picture of health. You look like you've never been sick a day in your life, and it's just amazing. And I'd love to hear more about your journey, but it's like we're all in this together, and we're all going to suffer, and we're all going to have incredible times of just, you know, health and all the wonderful things, and, you know, if we allow it in, right? But, you know, we just got to take advantage of this time to really learn and grow in Christ.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, Scott, you shared, you know, as you went through this whole thing, you know, that you got to a point where you could say yourself, right, you know what, it was the worst thing, but it was also the best thing, because I can say that now too, looking back.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
It is, but I'd love to bring you back, because I did, you know, I know you as the figure skater and this Olympian, and my goodness, you were at your zenith, right? You know, in the 80s when some really awesome stuff was happening around ice, you and the hockey team. And I remember afterwards, by the way, your signature move, the flip, and we got to see it in person. Was it Stars on Ice?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. We brought our kids to that in Minnesota. You were there, and you're right. When you see it in person, you're like, oh my word. Like,
it's breathtaking.
That. It is in person. It's totally different. Like mad respect. Oh, by the way, so I grew up in Minnesota, and once in a while, like, we wanted to go play hockey, and my mm-hmm. dad had figure skates and my brother had hockey skates. So I had to wear the figure skates playing hockey. And that didn't, I think I might've broke my nose 2 or 3 times. I just, those little things in the front. I don't know how you guys do it. Like, I literally couldn't skate with those on. So,
well, I mean, I couldn't do a backflip without the toe picks. You know, you can't do a lot of things without the toe picks. No LUTs, no toe loops, no flips, no nothing. I mean, it's like the toes are there to, you know, it's amazing the difference between a hockey blade and a figure skate blade. You know, it's much flatter and easier to control. Like, for, you know, the kids that come into my skating academy, it's like, you know, let's get them on figure skates first. They'll advance faster. They'll have more fun doing it. And once they get to a certain level of proficiency, we can transition them over to hockey skates in one day. But let's get them in figure skates where it's a little bit easier to skate on them. But if you're used to hockey skates, of course, you're going to hit the toe picks and you're going to, like, you know, go and do this all the time. But, it's when you're first starting it, they're much easier to skate on.
Interesting. Well, you know, with that said, I'd love for you, something that was fascinating that you shared is, you know, bring us back to the beginning, because, you know, you see somebody who's such a high performing athlete and you don't always understand maybe how people got there. And I think a lot of us tend to maybe compare ourselves to others, people we see, whether it's in business or athletics or, you know, in the church world or just in our profession. And we don't always know the backstory. And then if we actually learn how to compete with who we can be at our best and in the present and just keep building on that, that's how we get to some of these great outcomes. And as you shared, I was like, wow, this, your character is incredible. But I'd love for you to bring us back and kind of share your journey into how you got into skating.
Yeah, I mean, I was adopted at 6 weeks of age, and I only go back that far because, you know, when you're an adopted child, you have no idea what to expect. You know, it's, are they going to be tall? Are they going to be short? Are they going to be athletic? Are they going to be academic? Are they going to, you know, what are their challenges going to be? What are their strengths going to be? You know, all those things are just sort of like, we don't know because we don't have any genetics to kind of base our assumptions on. And so I got to a point where my parents realized it wasn't growing and they didn't know if it was normal or if there was something wrong. And then after a while, they realized there was something wrong. And so for 4 years, I was mostly in and out of hospitals. And we couldn't get an answer at the first hospital in Bowling Green, Ohio, where I grew up. Couldn't get an answer in the second hospital, Toledo, bigger city, bigger hospital. Couldn't get any answers the next year in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan Children's Hospital. And so we finally went to the Boston Children's Hospital the fourth year. And it was there that they, you know, I was very small, very sickly, didn't have really any physical development. And the doctors thought I had one illness and I didn't. I had all the symptoms, but I didn't have the illness. So the best they could do is send me home and just say, go live a normal life and see what happens. We can't treat something that we can't figure out what's causing it. So, you know, I was on diets of no sugar, no dairy, no flour. And so birthday parties weren't a lot of fun back then, you know, when I was little.
Didn't even know it, but you were kind of setting an entire trend back then. You're just a trendsetter.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, I was gluten-free, dairy-free before it was trendy, right?
And, right.
So to give my parents a morning off to recharge their batteries, there was a skating rink that just opened at the university, and they taught kids how to skate from 8 to noon. Every Saturday morning. And so I went and started skating, and it was kind of miraculous that it was, you know, because I was always around sick kids, and now I'm around 120, 150 well kids. It was kind of a whole different dynamic. And then, you know, realizing that, you know, I was always kind of the last one chosen because I was so little and weak, you know, growing up.
How old were you then, Scott, when you started skating?
I was nine. Yeah, I was okay. Nine. So I was pretty, it was pretty set at that point that I really wasn't, you know, an athlete. I really wasn't strong enough and big enough to compete at anything. And so after a few weeks of skating, I realized that I could skate as well kids. And after a few more weeks, I realized I could skate as well as the best athletes in my grade. And it was just sort of the first taste of self-esteem. And so it was like, okay, I want a lot more of that. I want it in abundance. And so the rink became my home. I would be there all the time. I'd skate public sessions, and I started taking lessons and skating on the freestyle sessions and started doing the compulsory figures. And I just sort of became a test track, you know, beginning competitive figure skating skater. And then my health just went like that. It just started to improve, and it was miraculous, you know, and they couldn't figure out why or what or how. And you know, I trace it all back, you know, to the Lord. It's just all things are revealed when it's time for them to be revealed. And this was something that he wanted to use. He wanted to use me, I guess, to, you know, to figure out, you know, ways of serving the community and doing different things in different ways and inspiring people. And really, he gets all the glory. I mean, I was really sick and really little. And then all of a sudden, I'm competing in a sport at a, you know, relatively high level. And then after years and years and years of failure, and all those I can trace back to self-inflicted, right? You know, I didn't work hard enough. I wasn't focused enough. I just, you know, I wasn't like intentional enough. Once I got to a certain point, I realized that, you know, when my back's up against the wall, I can come out swinging. And it was when my mom announced to us that she was facing a cancer battle that I kind of woke up and she said, we got 1 year left in skating because we're broke. And so I just put my head down and I did the work. And that year I came away with a victory. You know, I was at nationals, novice level, I was last, and then I was next to last. And then first year in junior, I beat 2 guys, you know, right? So, and then my last year, supposedly in skating, was going to be that year. And she was suffering from cancer, and, we didn't have any money. And so I went back to my training place, you know, for the last time, and had a new coach because my other coach retired. And I ended up winning the junior nationals that year, which opened the door to a sponsorship. And
so what changed during that year? Like, you're at the bottom. Yeah. I'm sure you're very concerned about your mom because she was all in. I've heard you talk about your mom supporting you in this. And I'm sure saying, hey, you know what? This is our last year is hard for her to tell you. What shifted?
What shifted was, you know, again, it's my last year, so I could just push all my chips into the middle of the table. It wasn't like a last year, I'm going to do like a little victory lap, because I wasn't really ever victorious, right? So it's kind of one of those things where I just had to, you know, I figured I might as well, if it's my last year in skating, I might as well go all in. And so I did. I submitted to my coach, and I went in all the way, and I worked harder than I'd ever worked before. And I really, you know, I was a little older, a little more mature, I guess. I was a senior in high school. And I just put my head down, got to work, and went from my highest finish at a national championships being 7th. I won the junior nationals, which put me in a great momentum place for the senior level. And it was their sponsor heard about me and came through. The only string attached was that I had to move to Denver and take from Dorothy Hamill's coach. Oh, well, I think I can do that. So I moved to Denver, and, the next year, again, I went back to being comfortable. I was 18. I was sponsored. I had my own apartment. I call it the trifecta. And I just failed miserably. I don't even know how I even made it to nationals that year. I was so distracted, and I wasn't well trained or anything, and I ended up coming back to 9th place in that competition. And it was that was in January, and then middle of May my mom lost her battle to cancer, and it was horrible. I was in her room until about 3 o'clock in the morning in the hospital, and she wasn't conscious or anything. She was on a lot of pain medication. And then I went home, and I was sleeping on the couch because we had a lot of people there to support us. My brother-in-law woke me up at about 8:30 in the morning. He just said, your mother is gone. And all I could think to say is, I know. It's really strange because she was the center of my universe. She was like, she meant more to me than anybody else. And then, you know, I lost her 44 years ago, and there's not a day I don't talk about her. There's not a day I don't think about her. There's not a day I don't try to do something that would please her. And, you know, it was, how do I do this without her? And it was just that I went on a long walk in our backyard, and I just had to think it through. How am I going to do this without her? And then I kind of came to this understanding that I don't have to do it without her. I can take her with me wherever I go. I can take her with me every time I take the ice, and I can I try to honor her in everything that I do. And now it came this, it just turned into this really cool thing where it's like, I might be a little late for my figures practice. Honor her. No. Okay. I'm going to be on time. You know, I'm doing this for my mom. And then if I didn't feel like doing a long program run through, you know, because I felt tired, or I just didn't feel like doing it that day, it was like, you're doing this for her now. And I would do the long program run through. So I ended up, from that 9th place finish that she saw me fail in, the next year I was 3rd in the United States and ranked 11th in the world. And that was just based on one decision to honor my mom. And then after that, you know, 2 years later, sorry about that. I put my phone on Do Not Disturb, and it disturbed. 2 years later, I'm on the Olympic team. And And then, you know, for the next 4 years after that, I never lost the competition. And all of it, I think, was just based on my love for my mom and the sacrifices that she made for me to be successful in my life. And I think that's why, in so many respects, Christianity fills a hole in my heart that, you know, that Jesus, you know, he sacrificed himself for all of us and took all of our shortcomings, all our mistakes, all of our sin, all of our, you know, things that we do, we took it away. And you know, seeing how even in her suffering, my mom would continue to sacrifice for us, you know, it just was an amazing example that she modeled Christ in that way. And so when the time came for me to dedicate my life to Jesus, I had already built those muscles, you know, and in another way.
So what was, during this period of time, like from leading up to losing your mom through really kind of focusing on her, which led to this amazing winning streak over, I think 80 to 84, you literally were first in everything that you did. Where was your faith in that?
That's crazy.
I know.
But it was there. It was, you know, like God was always there. He was always there, always there. And I, you know, when I left home to train away from home 6 months a year in Illinois, the first year I got to train with Janet Lynn, and it was her last year in competitive skating. And she was a devout Christian, was very, very, very public in her faith. And all the kids in the rink wanted to be like Janet, you know, so they all wanted to go to her church. They all wanted to, you know, kind of be like her. And so I'd watch them all, and they were all, you know, they had their Bibles and they were doing those things. And because we trained basically in a hotel, there was a Bible in the bedside, you know, little dresser. And I would start to read it, and I just didn't understand it. And then I started to pay attention to, you know, how people behaved in the faith space. And it was, you know, it just felt really, I didn't understand why they were, if it were the same God, same Jesus, same Spirit, why do they all have their own rules and regulations? And I thought, okay, I got to figure this thing out, because I was in a sport and there are rules to every game, right? I needed to figure out what these rules were. And I tried to read the Bible. I didn't understand it. Why is it so, it's so big and so comprehensive, and it's all stories about people, ancient stories. And it's like, I guess they all have some sort of moral to the story. So I almost looked at it as fairy fables and fairy tales, right? And it wasn't fair to look at it that way. I just thought, I don't get this. But I was always looking up, and I was always, you know, praying, and I was always hoping that whatever I'm supposed to be or however I'm supposed to do this life, that it would be revealed to me. You know, I was just kept waiting, and I kept, you know, again, praying and looking up, but I didn't know who I, you know, exactly who it was or how I was to do this. And so it kept coming into my life, and it kept coming into my life, and different things would happen that were just so unique and miraculous that it kind of solidified my belief in God. I just didn't quite understand Jesus and how he fit into all of this. And then once I met my wife, she asked me that question. You know, we were dating for a few weeks, and she said, look, I really like the way things are going with us, but there's something really important I need to talk to you about. And I said, you know, you can ask me anything. And she said, where are you in your relationship with Jesus Christ? And I just said, like any smart guy would say, I just said, where would you like me to be? And it was there that, you know, we talked, and I just said, I've got all these conclusions.
What did Tracy say when you said, where do you want me to be?
Oh,
you were clearly smitten with this, which is awesome.
Oh, of course.
That's such a real answer, by the way.
But it was, you know, it was that whole, you know, here's what I don't understand. Here's what I think. Here's what I feel. And she goes, okay, well, you need to talk to my minister, my pastor about this. Mm-hmm. And so she introduced me to her pastor, and it's like, okay, why is all this so combative, and why is everything argued about so much? And why are there all these denominations, and who's right and all this stuff? And he just said, I couldn't agree with you more. I was like, okay, well, that's a good start, I guess. But and then he handed me a Bible, and he just said, have you ever spent any time in this book? And I just, well, I try it. I just don't understand it. And he goes, well, do you like history? And I said, I love history. History is my favorite subject in school. And he said, well, this is a book of history. And I said, yes. And he said, but instead of thinking of it as a book of history about the people in this book, think more about how God interacted with these people. And it's like, well, that helps a lot. You know, that helps me a lot. And so I started going to church. And of course, the first 6 weeks I went to church was a study of the prodigal son. And that was really kind of interesting. And then the more strength and the more power I took from it. Just the whole idea that we have this God that loves us so much that he's given us everything. He's given us his word. He's given us his wisdom. He's given us his intention. He's given us his son, who, knowing that we all fall short and that we're all sinful and there has to be some sort of sacrifice for that sin, that he loves us so much that he would give his only son to us as a sacrifice. There's no greater extension of love I've ever heard besides that. And so if he can do that for us, my goodness, what can we do with him? And so my faith has just continued to just take on a different identity, and it's gone in leaps and bounds, and it's taken root in everything that I do now, everything that I think. And there's not a second that goes by in a day that I'm not looking up, and I'm not in prayer, and I'm not in supplication. You know, I just want to be better. And I want to be better for the people around me. And I want to, I want this world to be maybe even just slightly better, like grain of sand better, because I was in it, you know? And so, that's I'm living more intentionally now than I ever lived before. And my mom is still a huge part of it, but Jesus is pretty much taken center stage. And again, I talk about my mom every day, but I always tend to be talking about Jesus every day too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you, when you were first training, what was it? Who was the woman you mentioned? Was it Nancy who was like this, who was doing the Bible study, inviting people to her church? What was her name?
Oh, Janet Lynn.
Janet. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Like, wow, what a beautiful example. And here's a question I'd love to ask you, because I'm guessing, you know, in the media, sports, and I know a lot of people out there listening, right, in the business, the organization that they're in, as somebody who really has a strong faith, you're out there operating with people that have maybe very different views, very different backgrounds, different beliefs. And like she did, and like you do, you come in and you be that light and that influence in a way that creates relationship versus drives people away. It's something I know that you've been able to do. And I'd love to hear your thoughts for the rest of us. And hey, how do we bring our faith out just into the world, into what we do, in a way that really is, you know, being an ambassador for Christ versus being somebody that's, you know, severing relationships?
Well, it's, you know, it goes back to, you know, Matthew 5:16. It's like one of the most iconic scriptures in the Bible is let your light so shine, you know, so that others can see your good works, right? You know, so it's about being light. It's about being, and people are drawn to light, you know, they're attracted to light. And it's about the light that comes from, you know, doing good. And, you know, it's faith. And faith produces works. It's not works, you know, allows you to show your faith, right? It's like faith produces works. And so in that faith, I really want to serve the community. I do a lot of work in cancer. I'm always available to you know, organizations or needs in the community where I can help. I try to help, and I always try to lead with kindness. I'm not a combative person. I'm not someone that you know, is going to get out there and strike their fist at people. I realize that my work is to be an extension. God will do the rest. And in that, I can really just live in peace, and I can love my neighbor, and I can love my enemies, and I can just lead with love, you know, and all of those things, you know, come from spending time with the Lord and the Word, and doing that, you know, you feel like you almost, you're building muscle, you know, like when you show up at the ice every day and you get a little, that edge gets a little bit cleaner and that jump gets a little higher and that spin gets a little tighter. It's because the repetition of it has allowed you to build those muscles, and spending time in the Word every day, you know, whether it, you know, I sit down and I read, you know, a book in the Bible or part of a book in the Bible, and I listen to ministers on the radio, you know, all day and, you know, throughout the day. And that you just sort of, you know, keep building those muscles. And the stronger you get in faith, the less power the world has over you. And, you know, another scripture that came to mind that's always right there is, you know, John 16:33, that just says, you know, Jesus says, you know, to his disciples, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And just the power and just the statement of that is like, we all can overcome our circumstances and our environment by just clinging to Jesus. You know, he's overcome the world. He's defeated everything. You know, everything that'll bring us down and destroy us, he's already defeated. And if we can, you know, attach ourselves to him, that's kind of like, you know, it's Murphy's Law would always say, you know, the race isn't always won to the swift nor the battle to the strong, but that's the way to bet. You know, it's kind of, you know, if you really want to win in this life, the best way to do it, the only way to do it, is to learn from and cling to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I love that word, cling. That just sets a great visual. You know, when I, you know, we mentioned my accident earlier, I crushed my entire body from my chest up. What happened to me, Scott, wasn't survivable. And I was in God's presence. He was there. He came down. It's the only reason I'm here. But when I was in his presence, Scott, what was just flowing and emanating from him, washing over me with a physical weight, like waves washing over you in an ocean, was unconditional love.
Yeah.
When I first felt it, the first thought I had, I'll never forget this. I didn't even know how bad what happened to me was I'm not worthy of somebody loving me like this.
Yeah.
And in that, as I recovered, like what you just talked about, being in the Word, understanding really God's nature, right? When he said in scripture, I want to be your friend. I want to call you friend. I'm like, okay, the God of the universe wants to call me friend.
Yeah,
and the other thing was like, right? And then the other part for me was not who I saw in the mirror, but as I transformed and I understood who God made me to be, all of a sudden I started, like you just talked about, showing up in different situations differently. And it was a process. And all of a sudden your influence for him, the joy in your life, all of a sudden it just started. Even though I was going through some of the hardest adversity in my life, my level of joy also increased, even though externally it didn't look like that would be an outcome. So I really appreciate you sharing that story. That just reminded me of that amazing kind of period of growth and awareness I had myself.
Well, it's a friend of mine used to be involved in Special Olympics with me. His wife was, you know, in theology school and she was studying to become a pastor. And, you know, he said, the one thing I've learned from her is sort of, you know, his own definition of the gospel. And I go, what is that? And he goes, you are loved, deal with it. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, okay. You know, God's saying, I love you. No, I still love you. I love you. I know. I still love you. And it's like, okay, now we have to deal with that. All right. So now we know that God loves us unconditionally forever. We have to step into that and honor that in a really cool way of just trying to fend off anything that would separate us or even, you know, diminish, you know, that the gratitude for the love that's already there.
Yeah, and think about what you just said, right? You know, unconditional love, this is what I knew in that moment, that anything and everything I had ever done in the past, good, bad, or otherwise, was not even relevant. Like you talked about the prodigal son earlier, right? As you were just coming into the church. And when I realized that his love, like I had never understood or felt unconditional love. I didn't understand it because you don't get it from people typically. You get it from your golden retriever, maybe, right?
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, when I experienced that from the Lord and realized that there's the relationship that already exists that he has with me, that he wants me to join him in, and anything else in the past doesn't affect that. I got to tell you, like it changed my life in a moment.
Well, it does. And the thing is, as human beings, you know, I still, you know, one of the greatest examples of that I heard was the youth pastors at a church that we used to go to. You know, they finally, a young couple, they finally got their first home, and they had a very young family. They had a little girl and they had another, you know, a child on the way, and they're moving into this house and they're having to do all the work themselves. And because we painted the living room, it was this beautiful kind of eggshell white, you know, and it was just our first home and we took such pride in it. And, you know, when, you know, she said, I went out to grab the mail and I came in and my little girl had taken a Sharpie and was writing on the wall in the living room. And she, and, you know, again, her human thing, she just blurted out, what are you doing? I can't, what are you? And, you know, it's just like, that, you know, it just came out because again, it was just like, this is their first, you know? And so the little girl, she dropped the Sharpie and she ran into her bedroom. She was crying. And she realized in that moment that, you know, what happened was just nothing. It was like, with this little girl, that was nothing. They could paint over, they could do whatever. I mean, it was nothing. But every time the little girl would go by the living room, she'd start crying. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's us. You know, it's like, God's already forgiven us. He's already painted over all the Sharpie, right? He's done that. But we still bring that, you know, whatever we've done. I still suffer with that. I bring up anything that would have separated me from the Lord. I still kind of, I live in regret of that when it's stupid. And it's nonsense and it's selfish. And it's like, it's like, no, we've dealt with that. That's already been taken care of. I lay it at the foot of the cross and I never address that again because I'm not that person anymore. And it's like, if we can just do that and rise above our self-inflicted wounds, you know, we can be whole and we can step into the next with confidence and with clarity and without having to carry the weight of that enormous, you know, just it's heavy to carry that junk around. Right. You know, the day I got, yeah, it really is. You know, when I got the day, it was funny, the day I got baptized, you know, it was the same pastor, you know, same guy that married us. He's just a member of the family and amazing man. Anyway, you know, I publicly dedicated my life to Christ and I came out of the water and I just like, wow, that, you know, I was only under for a second, but I came out different. And, you know, I went back, I put some dry clothes on and Tracy and our newborn son, she was going to have lunch with her friend and I was going to go back to the house and watch football. And, she just said, you know, she looked at me and she was kind of like that wide-eyed thing. And she goes, how do you feel? And I could only think of one word and it was lighter. I feel so much lighter. Mm. And that's what the Lord gives us. It's like, we don't have to live with that anymore. We can be lighter and we don't have to be, you know, his yoke, he says, is his burden is light. You know, and we can, it's all the stuff that our lives and that separation brings us that makes it heavy. And if we just, you know, lay all that down and just, you know, again, when I came out of the water, I none of that stuff really existed, but I still find myself trying to pick it up, you know, and I just have to, in faith, understand that that's already been taken care of. I don't need to worry about that anymore. And I can move forward.
Yeah, it's like that, the heaviness, the weight of fear, of guilt, of shame. And I think if we're feeling those, we really haven't turned it all over completely, because those aren't things that exist in the relationship God has with us. Those are things we bring into it by not really just accepting the grace and the gift he gave us through his son, Jesus. Oh,
and here's my filter. I finally had to, you know, it was funny. I was asked to speak at this fundraiser, and it was a tough subject. It was abuse. It was a whole thing about, it was just, and, you know, and they were talking about women being hurt, you know, by domestic violence. And I just, you know, I said, look, there's lots of ways of hurting people. And it can come out of, it can be physical abuse. It can be emotional abuse. It can be verbal abuse. It can be psychological abuse. There's so many levels, and I walk through things that I'd witnessed. You know, in that, you know, I've had to create a filter, and the filter is, you know, I framed it. It sits right outside my closet, so I walk by it all the time, every day. And my filter is the nine fruits of the Spirit. Oh. You know, my filter is, if I look at something and it doesn't have one of these, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. If it doesn't have, if it's not, it doesn't fit into any of those descriptions, then what am I doing? You know, it's like, it's gotta fit in those nine descriptions. And if it doesn't, then it's offensive to me, you know? So if we can live in the fruits of the Spirit, it changes everything, you know. I don't have to, you know, bring, if I see the world doing something and it's wrong, God will take care of it. I have 100% faith. I don't have to be in living in suffering and desperation over something that's in our world. It's, God will take care of it. I have to be strong. And I have to be focused, and I have to love, and I have to lead with all that. But just the whole peace that I get out of living in love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, you know, gentleness, faithfulness, you know, self-control, all of that. It, you know, just the gentleness, you know, one of the fruits of the Spirit is just like, Jesus was gentle, and he was God. You know, it's like, wow. I mean, think about being, you know, having the power, all the power of everything that's created, everything came from God. Every single thing we touch, feel, smell, see, whatever, it all came from God. And yet Jesus was gentle. He did have righteous anger, you know, especially if it was offended the Father, that was offensive to him. And he turned the tables, and he did all the, he fashioned the whip, and he, you know, he reclaimed the territory that was his Father's house. You know, we you know, there's that, right? But in general, you know, God created it. God's blessed it. He's breathed life into it. You know, if we stay close to him, he'll give us the strength to rise above it.
Yeah, Scott, you know, go ahead, Jane.
You've gone through a lot of health issues with cancer. Mm-hmm. And I
it's
know
a hobby.
Well, there's a lot of people dealing with health issues out there right now. Can you bring us to date on your cancer battle, and what could you say to encourage folks walking through health issues?
Well, you know, it's this one's been different. You know, when I was diagnosed with testicular cancer, I had to do intensive chemotherapy and then a 38 staple surgery. That intervention was, you know, really aggressive. First brain tumor, the best course of action was gamma knife radiation, you know, which basically exposed my entire brain to radiation, which not ideal. You know, I kind of use it as my excuse for my behavior. The next one, brain tumor, came back 6 years later, and it felt like I got just kicked in the gut. You know, it's like, okay, I've had cancer, brain tumor, now another one. This one presented itself well for surgery, but the surgery didn't go well, and it became a total of 9 surgeries. Got through it. And then 6 years later, I see a pattern forming here. 6 years later, the tumor came back again. We caught it on a well visit. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, I go in for a routine scan and they go, oh, it's back. And so they were going through the different ways of dealing with the tumor. And they said, well, you can have surgery again. And I'm thinking, oh, well, last time wasn't so much fun. And they, you know, but they, you know, they vary surgery techniques, keep evolving and getting better. And so I said, we're confident that we could do the surgery. And it's like, okay. And now there's it's on a trial, but there's this medical targeted therapy that happens to work on your particular tumor, comes with some side effects, but you can do that. And the whole time they're talking, all I kept hearing in the back of my mind was, it was really weird. It was this overwhelming thing of just get strong. And it wasn't like an audible voice, but it was just this thought that kept repeating over and over again in the back of my head, get strong. And every time somebody would hear, that's all I heard. It was like, get strong, get strong, get strong. And so I didn't know exactly what that meant. You know, it could have meant I need to get stronger physically. It meant I need to get stronger emotionally, or maybe I need to get stronger intellectually, or maybe I need to get stronger spiritually. And so the only choice I could make was all of the above. Oh, no. And so I just started trying to be stronger in every capacity of physical, emotional, and intellectual, and spiritual. And over the last 5 years, you know, the tumor has grown and shrunk and shrunk and grown and shrunk and grown. And it got to the point where in my being, I'm not in denial necessarily, but I just stopped giving it power over my everyday life. And I'm due for another MRI, but I'm not worried about it. I'm just going to live, and I'm going to get strong, and I'm going to be closer to the Lord than I've ever been. And I'm hoping to be younger than my 63-year-old body. And, you know, I want to be interested, and I want to be, I want to love well, and, you know, I want to live in kindness and joy. And I want to be interested in all things, you know. So it's as I continue to, you know, stay strong and somewhat vigilant, like the tell, like when the tumor is really doing its mischief, is I have visual symptoms, and I haven't had visual symptoms really lately. So I'll go in and check on it, but I'm not giving it the power over me that it used to have, of inciting fear and anxiety and resentment and anger and all those negative things that just create that garbage in your body that makes you sick. Right? So I do tell people that vigilance is key. The sooner you can get to something, you know, the easier it'll be to treat. There are some things that you can live with. There are certain things like, you know, for men, you know, and I try to tell this to men, you know, if we live long enough, we will develop prostate cancer. It's just a nature of the beast, you know, but do we need to knee jerk, like right now, take, you know, panic? And no, it's like, it's, if you need to do something right away, do it. But there are so many different ways of treating prostate cancer that you really need to do your homework. And, you know, it's, again, in my bathroom is a poster, and it's all of Murphy's Laws. And I love Murphy's Laws because they just make me smile, right? And one of them really hit me. It hit me in a really interesting way. It said, where you stand on something depends on where you sit. You know, that's one of Murphy's Laws. And it's true in cancer, you know, where you stand in your treatment will depend in many regards on where you're sitting. If you're sitting with a surgeon, you're probably going to get cut. If you're sitting with a radiation oncologist, you're probably going to get radiated. If you're sitting with a hem-onc, you're probably going to get infused. So for me, a second opinion doesn't really mean anything. It's the seventh opinion that means something. So get educated on whatever is happening in your body, because there's, you know, more than one way of taking care of something. And maybe all you need is A, or maybe all you need is B, or maybe the best thing for you is C, or maybe right now the only course of action is D. But you need to understand what's happening in your life and your world. And I think, you know, my faith has given me a better understanding of all of that, that, you know, we are fragile, resilient, temporary. And so, you know, I just know that today is one of my days, and I really want to live it as well as I possibly can.
Well, Scott, I know we're coming close to our time, but I don't want to end this podcast without you. are you comfortable leading people to the Lord that don't know the Lord?
Well, it's, you know, we all have that thing that's inside us. Something's missing. It's like, I wish I could, you know, some people fill it with, material things. Some people, fill it with, they just try to, they expect the world to kind of fill those empty spots. You know, the second you really step into relationship, you know, with Jesus, you understand that those empty spots are, only empty because he's there to fill them. And, you know, the strength, the power, the confidence that comes with stepping into everyday life in relationship with our Creator and Jesus and the Spirit, you know, flowing through us and allowing us to probably be better or more alive than we've ever been before. That is what having a faith-filled life gives. And I would, you know, it's like, I won the Olympics and I felt empty. My medal lived in my underwear drawer for 8 years in a brown paper bag.
Oh no.
And I couldn't figure out why it offended me so much. And I realized that once I came to my faith, that it was an idol. You know, that medal was an idol. It was meant to represent me instead of me representing me. You know, yes, you know, a big part of my story is that I won an Olympic gold medal, and that's nice, but that's not, that was then. And, you know, yeah, that achievement opened a lot of doors for me, and it did some really amazing things for me, but ultimately the hardware needed to go away. You know, it just, I didn't need my world being occupied by that object. So I got rid of it. It's in a museum in Colorado Springs, and they're taking care of it, which is great. My kids love to see it whenever they, you know, it shows up in Denver for an event or something. But it's like, I was pretty miserable after the Olympics. You know, I just felt adrift. And, you know, I worked harder and I worked harder and I worked harder, thinking that it would fill my empty spot. Work, 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 success, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, making money, whatever that is. And it just didn't fill that empty spot. It wasn't until Tracy, my wife, you know, really took my hand and walked me into the presence of the Lord that I things started to kind of regenerate and started to come alive. And it gave me the strength and the foundation to be able to fend off a lot of the things in my life that were just really bringing me down and disrupting what should be an incredible life. And so for people out there that feel that emptiness, that feel that isolation, that feel that separation, that feel, and again, it can just be that that sense that there's something missing, that my life isn't complete, that I'm sad, or I'm adrift, or I just don't feel any purpose. Your next stop, you know, needs to be with someone that can guide you and allow you to understand who you are in Jesus. And in that, man, it just changes everything. And for the better, it's an upgrade, big time. You know, it's like when you get the latest phone and you're like, oh, wow, the camera's better. No, this is like, that doesn't compare to any of that. It's like the ultimate personal upgrade, because if we're not strong physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, it's like sitting on a chair with three legs. We're going to fall down. We're probably going to get hurt. So being in a relationship with the Lord is that missing piece that will get us through our lives joyfully.
To our listeners, thank you for listening.